This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Mr. Durham, good Wednesday morning to you. What's happening?
I'm good, Pack. Great to be with you. ACC Women's Lacrosse Championship begins today in Chapel Hill. We'll get a full preview of that from Rachel DeCoco coming up. Mark Krikorian will be here at 7:45. Looking forward to having the head soccer coach of Florida State with us. His team, number one in the country, as we get ready to go through the NCAA Women's Soccer Championship. Syracuse football coach Dino Babers at 8:15, always fun to visit with. And Valerie Cagle, who owns softball at Clemson, will join us. No hitters, intentional walks with the bases loaded, home runs. Where's jersey number 72? We're looking forward to talking to Valerie Cagle at 9:30 this morning. So, busy show, good show. And you mentioned a couple of things here that we're going to get into today on the eve of the NFL draft. And looking forward to that, too. But the news item of the night came at 9:05 last night, Pack. 9:05 p.m. this came out. Let's just slip it in somewhere in the middle of the night. Nobody will ever notice we did this, and we can move on with our day, right? The NCAA Board of Governors yesterday unanimously approved a contract extension for President Dr. Mark Emmert through 2025, Pack. At 9:05 last night, this got announced.
Well, good for Dr. Emmert.
Where you want to start?
Well, I mean, first of all, congratulations to Mark Emmert, because he's good to go through 25, assuming the NCAA is still in business. That'd be the first thing, so congratulations to him.
There's number one.
Right. Issue number two is, I got to be honest with you, I am not surprised, because when the NCAA March Madness was taking place, if you remember, the women's tournament had a little bit of an issue in which the workout room looked like had as many weights in it as actually my basement. That was a problem, and all of a sudden you had the vote of confidence from the board then, and you're like, is anyone paying attention? I'm just asking, is anybody paying attention to what's going on here? You've got all the issues going on with Congress, in which, quite frankly, the NCAA has just gotten beat up, battered, and taken to the woodshed with all this name, image, and likeness stuff. So, you know, hey, why not? Let's give this guy a vote of confidence, an extension to his contract. He's got two commas in the deal. Again, I never worry about what anybody else is making. Good for him. He works for the Board of Governors, you know, as he pointed out, quite frankly, I don't apply that to myself. They give me the ability to do my job. So none of this surprises me, but I will tell you what did surprise me. Something I did not know. I did not know that Grant Hill, the former Duke all-star, all-world dude, is on the Board of Governors. I did not know that. Mm-hmm. I did not know that Robert Gates, the former Secretary of the Defense, is on the Board of Governors. Now, and not to get sidetracked with your question, I get it when you've got the president of school A, B, C, D, E, F, and G on the board. I totally understand it. I get it. I mean, that's the universe.
Right.
And I don't mean this to be disrespectful at all. But what in the world does Grant Hill and Robert Gates, the former Secretary of the Defense, when they have their Zoom meetings, I would be just curious to know, what do they bring to the table? I'm just asking. When we start talking about name, image, and likeness, and what's issues taking place on college campuses, and the student athletes' well-being, someone help me on that one, because I'm like, wow, I did not know. So, listen, we live in a crazy world. Nothing should surprise anybody. The fact that the NCAA tried to bury this lead last night, that's not surprising. And we have the 5 o'clock news dumps all the time. I mean, we kid around about the infamous 10:05 news releases, which is kind of a joke amongst ourselves. But as far as the NCAA in the middle of the night putting out a release, and really the fourth paragraph Oops. Oh, by the way, we decided to give Mark Emery an extension. Tells you everything you need to know. I mean, there's no need to kill this or beat it up to shreds. It is what it is, and it's not surprising at all, in my opinion. So some folks may disagree. That's fine. But I'm not surprised at all, Wes.
The by the way, of note, there are a handful of Power Five presidents that are on this committee, the NCAA Board of Governors, the University of Colorado, University of Wisconsin, Oklahoma State would fall into that category, Michigan State as well. The ACC representative, if you will, and it's not done like that. It's just you're selected by the NCAA. The ACC's lone representative on the NCAA Board of Governors is Dr. Randy Woodson, who is the chancellor at NC State. And you mentioned Grant Hill. That would be the only other person with remote ACC ties. Mark Emmert has been the president of the NCAA since 2010. Prior to that, he was the president at the University of Washington. Prior to that, he was the chancellor at the University of Washington. Prior to that, he was the chancellor at Louisiana State University in Baton Rouge. So, all that being said, he gets an extension through 2025 during a time which, as Pac said at the very beginning, there is going to be some question about what this organization and the structure of that organization will be by the time we get to the end of that contract for Dr. Emmert. But it is a stunning move given the landscape. Lots of reporting, I think, is going to be done about this. But one that was Nicole Auerbach, who's been with us before from The Athletic, said that texts from ADs and coaches were coming in immediately about bewilderment of how this happened last night. If that's the case, some ADs then are in the position where they've got to go to their chancellor this morning and say, hey, look, you know, we got issues here. So that being said, there's where we stand from the structure standpoint.
But are you surprised, though, Wes? I mean, listen, it's a great gig if you can get it. It's an awesome gig if you can get it. And if the Board of Governors, that esteemed group, a bunch of smart people, think that he's the guy to lead them, hey, Merry Christmas. Go for it. I say this all the time. If you're weak at the top, you are bound to fail. And that's true whether you run an insurance company, the NCAA, or Packer and Durham, or ESPN, or SiriusXM. That's all true. All that's true.
Was I surprised? In some ways, yes. In other ways, I think Dr. Emmert is the front man for the public flogging that college athletics is taking right now because of the structure of the National Collegiate Athletic Association. Okay? Look, we're on the front end of a major landscape change in college athletics. You have said this for, 6 months now?
Longer than that.
Really, since we came out of the pandemic. I mean, but you talked about it from November on, right? When we got to a point about name, image, and likeness, and we understood the momentum, things like that, right?
I've been talking about it before we even started this show. I mean, you could see this. There was going to be a change in the landscape of the way college athletics conducts its business. So this is no surprise as far as, hey, oh my gosh, here comes some issues that Congress is going to deal with, how we're going to handle name, image, and likeness, transfer portal, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It goes on and on.
Okay. I would say this. I think the NCAA has done all it can to push name, image, and likeness all the way to the end of the road without making a decision, including yesterday. You saw that quote last night about name, image, and likeness. It wasn't a quote. It was, you know, holding it off again. We are headed to a crescendo involving individual states, the federal government, and the NCAA. Because, quite frankly, July 1 is going to be a pretty interesting day in this world. There are going to be some states, and I'll just use the ACC's example, Pac. There are going to be some states, Florida being the most prominent, that July 1, they will have a name, image, and likeness law in effect. North Carolina does not. The other states that I don't think Georgia does. I don't think South Carolina, North Carolina. I'm not sure Virginia does. So all of a sudden, Florida State and Miami, as it relates to the ACC, can go name, image, and likeness all they want. The NCAA had every opportunity to step in and craft policy about this and didn't. holding off because they're, you know, the federal government brought them to Congress and all these other things. That right there is one major issue that the NCAA's failed to address here. It's just been inept about it. And last night's statement about name, image, and likeness, they were just continuing to kick the can down the road without making a decision. We don't need that in college athletics. We need people to get together and make stuff happen. Look what happened last year to get us to play football when those commissioners got on those Zoom calls. We're not getting that from the National Collegiate Athletic Association right now. And that is frustrating for a lot of people in this business, I think.
Not quite a year ago, and I'd have to go up and look at the exact quote, but I'll paraphrase it here because it was in the neighborhood. When the pandemic hit in March of last year, and the real leaders of college athletics, which I thought, in my opinion, were the commissioners at the time. That was John Swofford of the ACC, Greg Sankey of the SEC, Bob Bowlsby of the Big 12, and, of course, Larry Scott, and Mr. Warren at the Big 10. Those were really the guys that were directing the where we're going to try to navigate through this. I still remember Mark Emmert was, again, we kept talking last year, where is the NCAA in all this? There was no quotes. There was right. No leadership. You hadn't heard anything out of them. And finally, Mark Emmert had a quote where it was, well, you know, this pandemic is concerning. You know, at the rate we're going, we may have an issue that we might not be able to play sports. And it was like, dude, are you under a rock? I mean, this is where you've got to shine. This is where, hey, when things are uneasy and things are difficult and things are tough, you find out who the leaders are. This is true whether you be your football team, mm-hmm. your business, whatever. And there's got to be some leadership and direction. That's why I keep saying, if you are weak at the top, you are bound to fail. So Mark Emmert was hiding underneath whatever it was, his man cave, maybe worrying about how to get that one yoga mat at the NCAA women's workout facilities for the Final Four. Listen, if the Board of Governors thinks he's the guy, hey, that is your business. Heaven forbid we get on your case or tell you you're wrong. But if you think that's the guy, go for it. But when everything goes to, you know what, in a handbasket, don't look around and go, I can't believe this happened. Guys, it all starts at the top. And when there was the infamous vote of confidence, when crazy stuff was happening during March Madness, that's all you need to know. So the news last night, that's why I said, doesn't surprise me at all. That's the same group that thought he was doing a great job in March. And I'm not even talking about how poorly the NCAA has come across in Congress with all these testimonies and long cases, which has been a disaster as far as the PR standpoint about what the NCAA represents. So, hey, it is what it is. So I don't think any of us should be surprised.
But we talk about name, image, and likeness. We're talking about the business side of college athletics. How about the enforcement side of college athletics?
Wow, it's comical.
How about that side of the house?
But listen, when you don't have the ability...
It's ridiculous.
When you don't have the ability to really investigate people, when you can't, when you have no subpoena power, I mean, it'd be like saying, hey, our police department is looking into the bank robbery. Hopefully the robbers will come back and hand us the video evidence so we can get after them. That's almost kind of what we're talking about. I mean, there's been so much information just on the FBI case with college basketball, and there's still guys coaching that, quite frankly, have no business being on the sideline based on the letter of the law. So,
Think about this, too. Think about this, too. We have an institution in major college athletics that is under major investigation for, you know, sexual harassment. Right? I mean, what is going on at LSU now
is filthy.
It's a campus investigation. It's no longer just athletics. I mean, it's amazing.
It's amazing
the NCAA just continues to sit idly by on open investigations as it relates to enforcement of work that's already been done, sometimes at the federal level, as it relates to what the FBI investigation on basketball was, in addition to things that are going on that, man, we'll get to it when we get to it.
Well, there was a story last week talking about Mark Emmert might be the perfect guy for LSU's situation. I'm thinking, holy mackerel. If you gave me a list of a million people that I would want to put in that position, I can assure you he would not make my top million. I mean, come on. It, like I said, after a while, you just kind of have to laugh and say, hey, if that's the direction you want to go, tag, you're it. I wish you the very best. But I really think grown adults should be in the room to make these decisions, my opinion.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what the structure of the organization looks like at the end of the contract, or the end of the extension, I should say, which is now 2025 for Dr. Mark Emmert as the president of the NCAA. They did add, by the way, we have a commitment to you know, finding out what name, image, and likeness will be all about.
I suggest you...
Making a commitment to name, image, and likeness.
I suggest you might want to get in front of the parade on that one, but, you know, call me crazy. I'm down here in the basement with dogs, so what can I tell you?
Yeah. Modernize the rules. We're going to modernize the rules during our commitment.
Let's have another subcommittee meeting.
Well, July 1, Florida's playing. Florida's playing the game July 1.
Let's make sure. Who's in charge of donuts?
Some other states.
Who's in charge of donuts? Who's picking up the croissants? Let's have another subcommittee meeting. Let's get together. What are you saying? Next Tuesday, corner office. Who's getting the donuts? That's what they're worried about.
Yeah, there we go. All right, the NFL draft is tomorrow night, and this is where we're going to get Packer and Durham participation points today.
That's it.
I want to know, we want to know, who were the athletes you followed in the ACC who you then continued to follow in the pros? And today, Mark and I are going to share our list, too.
And we're talking about with
guys
the same,
we followed as kids.
Yeah, we're talking about, though, as like with the same enthusiasm. When they played for school X and you got the pom-poms out, rah-rah, you felt the same way when he or she went to the next level, whether that be Major League Baseball, the NFL, NBA, WNBA, whatever. So, you know, there are individuals that you said, you know what, I am a fan for life. And yeah, they're giving away the jersey I love the most, but now I'm going to be a fan of fill in the blank. So we're going to give you our list, but we want yours as well. Right? That's the deal.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Now, NFL draft tomorrow night, Trevor Lawrence. Probably, in all likelihood, going to be your number one overall pick. I had Reese Davis on the radio show yesterday. He's pretty confident. He's going to be hosting that bad boy. So what do you think, Mr. Durham? We're going to kind of transfer your rooting interest from college love to pro love today on this topic.
Well, I can tell you that in this particular area, Jaguar 16 jerseys will fly off the shelves in Cartersville, Georgia. In fact, I should have sent you guys this picture. Trevor's partnership with Bose has begotten a mural on the side of Agan's Bakery on Main Street in Cartersville that the artist will then go back in after the draft on Thursday night and put the jersey on the mural, if you will. He's definitely going to be number one. He's definitely going to Jacksonville. It's kind of anticlimactic, to be honest. I'm as interested to see kind of the ties behind Trevor Lawrence and who else from the ACC goes in the first round Thursday night and kind of what impact they have. Now, we got to this because, you know, back when we were kids, we didn't have jerseys readily available. You could order something out of the Sears catalog maybe and hope that it's the right number. But that was about it. You know, hope the Huffy box of NFL stuff. There were no NBA jerseys, really no Major League Baseball jerseys with names and stuff on the back. One of the reasons I'd kind of like to go back, I'd like to have a jersey collection. My son, as you know, has one, and I'm kind of like, well, man, that'd be great to have that, wouldn't it? But what athletes did you follow in the ACC that you intently followed at the next level? And, you know, there'll be a lot of Trevor Lawrence fans in Jacksonville who were Clemson fans, I'm sure, or Cartersville Purple Hurricane fans. Nonetheless, okay, here's my list. And now this is going to run the gamut a little bit for you, okay? Because some of this was adulting. But if you had to ask me who I started following intently, there are three guys. From the time they left North Carolina, and I grew up a huge Carolina fan, obviously, that they left Carolina and I followed them into the professional ranks, and I, like, to the point where the games weren't as prominently shown, I would get up in the morning and look for the box scores in the pages of the old Raleigh News Observer pack. But when Lawrence Taylor was drafted by the New York Giants, I became a Giants fan, and I became a Lawrence Taylor fan because I had seen him play at Carolina, right? The two that will probably surprise you. Now, why wouldn't you like LT, right? I mean, he ruined people's lives in Carolina's last ACC championship and then went to the NFL, and Bill Parcells and his staff helped him create a position, really, right? Outside linebacker pack?
Well, hey, it's your list. Man, go for it. Because when you see my list, okay, you're going to start laughing. You're going to laugh.
So Lawrence Taylor would be the first. The second one was Walter Davis, who played on Carolina's 77 Final Four team, won an Olympic medal in Montreal, great player at Chapel Hill. But when he went to the Phoenix Suns, he played in the 78 All-Star game at the Omni in Atlanta, and I remember watching the All-Star game in Atlanta just to see how Walter Davis would play. Amazing player in the NBA, All-Star, two times All-NBA, Rookie of the Year, the Greyhound, still one of my favorite players of all time. So Walter Davis was on the list. Now, here's one that'll get you, Pac. Bobby Jones. Okay? Bobby Jones played at Carolina in the early 70s, then was originally a member of the Denver Nuggets of the ABA, then won an NBA title with Philadelphia, went into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago, as it's noted here. Had a miraculous career. Now, here's kind of how weird this one was. I used to wear canvas Carolina blue Chuck Taylor shoes to games. And after games, Bobby would always come up and say, "I like your shoes, Wes." Now, for, 6-7-year-old Wes Durham, that was enormous.
Oh, I see. So you know.
That was enormous. And then he wrote me a note after a birthday, and it was unbelievable. Couldn't believe it. The last two are a little bit of adulting. I met Jason Veritek for the first time when he was still playing in the minor leagues and knew he was a grad. I did not do his games at Georgia Tech. I arrived in 95 after he had already graduated and left to – I mean, this guy was back-to-back the number one pick in the draft. I had a chance to spend time around him before he ever hit the bigs. And he was playing with the Port City Roosters in the Mariners organization the first time I ever met him. And I was really impressed by the grind. And I became a fan of his journey. And lo and behold, he ended up being the captain of the Boston Red Sox. So Jason Veritek became a guy I followed intently. The last one is one that I saw as a freshman and couldn't believe that the guy won the U.S. Amateur at Cog Hill and then has become a friend. And so every week on the PGA Tour, I always check out and try to see where Matt Kuchar is. Because my wife recruited him to Georgia Tech when she worked for the golf program at Georgia Tech. Matt and his wife was a former tennis player at Georgia Tech. He has done an event in Atlanta to help support a charity that I was on the board of for years. He's a good guy, and obviously he's cashed a lot of checks. But Matt is a guy who I follow on the tour now because we have a friendship, and that's one of the reasons why. So there you go. That's my list of five. How's that?
I like it. I liked your list. Now, I will point out, regardless of your age, this will certainly fall into play in terms of how old were you when you were totally enamored with sports, right? And mm-hmm. when you put together your own list, or you call in, or you put it hashtag Packer and Durham, we're not going to judge you based on how far back you go. Especially coming from us, right? Because when you see my list, right, you're going to laugh. Because this is, I think, as much of fandom of when you were just totally into watching ACC sports and who hooked you to the point where you went, "Hey, you know what? I can't wait to see what they do on the next level." Not everybody. It's not everybody, right? It's going to be probably a short list that you got hooked on where you said, "You know what? Even if it's a team you don't really love, you know, I really love so-and-so right. at school X, and man, can't wait to see how they play in the NFL or the NBA or the WNBA, whatever your story is going to be here. So that's why I think this is a fun topic, because you can go back as far as you want, or you could be somebody that you saw this year. You say, you know what? I am absolutely jazzed about Matt Nelson, who, by the way, was on the show yesterday and went yard in the afternoon. And I can't wait to see what Matt Nelson does when he's in Major League Baseball, because he's going to the show. I mean, so wherever you fall on this one, you can have some fun with it, all right? And you can kind of connect dots and all that stuff. But I liked your list. I did. Because you and I, growing up in North Carolina, I wasn't a big fan of the light blue. I liked the red and white of NC State. And so that's going to come across when you see my list coming up whenever we unveil this bad boy. But have fun with it. 844-SAY-ACCN. All right? Or hashtag Packer and Durham, and we'll have some fun with this bad boy for the next 2.5 hours.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
ACC stars that you said, you know what? I'm going to follow them through the pros, see how they would do. All right, we got Wes's list. Now it's time for mine. And I'm going to just tell you that the first couple that are on my list are only because I knew them in college and became buddies with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I lived in a good time in the early 80s of Clemson, South Carolina, when Danny Ford, youngster people, had things going on, and the golf team started its incredible run, which we discussed yesterday with Larry Penley. So my very first was a teammate of mine, a guy by the name of Dillard Pruitt. And Dillard went on to not only have a great college career, he went on to the PGA Tour. To play and then eventually to work. And he just literally retired, and he's chilling out in Greenville, South Carolina, one of the all-time super nice guys. They don't make him nicer than Dillard Pruitt. And, man, could he play. And so I think he always felt sorry for me, because every time we would go to do practice rounds and stuff, he'd say, come on, Pat, because he knew I liked to play fast. And Dillard and I would go ahead and kind of get ahead of everybody else and finish a round in 3 hours and 26 seconds, and you know, he'd shoot 67, I'd shoot 97, and but we'd laugh going all the way around. So Dillard Pruitt, an old teammate, just again could not make people better than Dillard Pruitt. So he's first on my list. Another guy that I got to be buds with at Clemson was a guy who was right outside Winston-Salem, North Carolina, my hometown. A guy by the name of Perry Tuttle. And if you remember Clemson's first national championship win in football, the Orange Bowl, it was old PT, taking care of business. And there was the game right there. But Perry Tuttle, a great dude, a tremendous person, went on to the NFL with the Buffalo Bills. And when you get a chance to meet these guys in college and you see them going to class and you cut up with them, you're like, man, I know that guy. And you go ahead and you watch him on Sundays in the NFL. So Dillard Pruitt, teammate, Perry Tuttle. Was a one. And another guy who was in my freshman class at Clemson, and there was all kinds of hype about him. And I remember the first week I was in school at Clemson, the guys on the golf team, we went to old Fike Fieldhouse to do a little pickup basketball game. And we got the winners of the game that was played in front of us. That included a bunch of football players. And there was a guy by the name of William Perry, who at the time was about 6'3", 295. And that was a big man back in the early 80s. And I saw the fridge come down on a 3-1 fast break, and he dunked it right in front of us. And we were all laying up against the wall, and we looked at each other going, hey, who's guarding this guy in hoops? We went on to have a pretty good career at Clemson, wins the national championship, and, of course, then won the Super Bowl with the Chicago Bears. So those were three guys that I got to know a little bit when I was in school, and I followed them religiously to the next level. Dillard Pruitt in golf. Perry Tuttle, NFL, William Perry, the refrigerator in the NFL, all right? Now, we're going to go to West Durham style. Growing up as a kid, a knucklehead kid in Winston-Salem, I didn't like the light blue. No, no, no. You know why? Because I was a fan of the red and white of NC State. And when I think of NC State as a kid, there was one guy and one guy only, David Thompson. 44, going to jump out of the gym. And man, alive! Look at this dude, was so far ahead of his time, it wasn't even funny. And DT, how about that? NC State, Maryland, the old Cole Fieldhouse. Remember those games? Super Bowl Sunday games?
Ooh.
But that was my guy right there, David Thompson. He even had a pair of DT sneakers. And when he went on to the ABA, had a pair of them, the DT sneakers. That is old school. But I follow him in the ABA when he started the dunk contest and said, I'm just going to take off from the free throw line. But, man, did I love me some David Thompson. And, you know, he went through all kinds of demons and everything else and got his life together. But, man, I just loved David Thompson as a kid.
That's awesome.
Growing up at that point.
DT sneakers. You had a pair of DTs.
I did. DT sneakers. And that, no, they don't make that. I wish I still had them. They'd be worth something today. Because they don't make those anymore.
Dude, if we had one DT shoe, it'd be awesome.
And it had the cool logo, the D and the T. I just still remember that little, almost looked like a Converse.
Man, that was like
Converse
back in the day.
Oh yeah, old school. Now
you swapped your Pro Keds and your Converse for your DTs
Wilson
Betas. Those are the two shoes everybody wanted.
You get absolutely right, 100% right. And for everybody that's over the age of 50 watching the show right now, you're thinking, oh my God, I haven't thought about those things in 100 years. You're right.
That's exactly right.
The last person on my list is not a player, but I will remember
what?
I will take this to my grave. Again, being a huge NC State fan as a kid, I remember walking into the kitchen, getting ready to go to school, and I opened up the Winston-Salem Journal, and the headline was, Lou Holtz leaves for the New York Jets. And I was crushed. Because I loved the Bucky Twins. I loved NC State football. Lou Holtz had it going on. There he was. And I saw Lou Holtz speak one time. And I'll tell you what, this is how much I loved Lou Holtz.
Look at Ed Seaman.
I know. This is great stuff right here.
Look at Ed Seaman behind Lou.
That's it. But I saw Lou Holtz speak one time, and he did a magic trick. And that's what got me hooked in doing magic as a kid. God. I mean, that's how much I loved Lou Holtz. So when he left NC State to go to the Jets, I'm telling you, I was bummed for weeks. I could not believe that. Oh, I remember that photo. I was sick.
Oh,
I've hated the Jets ever since. I really have. Hated the Jets ever since. They cannot take Lou Holtz away from me. So is Lou. Yeah,
Lou hates the Jets.
Yeah, he did not last long. It was a Steve Spurrier-esque, Nick Saban, I'm just not cut out for this thing. And it was a disaster. And I was so bummed that not only did he stink with the Jets, I'm like, well, you should have never left Raleigh. Never left Raleigh. So that's my list. Dillard Pruitt, Perry Tuttle, William Perry, because I knew him in school, and David Thompson and Lou Holtz. That's my five.
Lou Holtz. All right. We'll get your calls, 844-SAY-ACCM. Paula in Florida before Mark Krikorian joins us. Paula, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, and I love your show.
I'm a
diehard Florida State fan, and my guys, it's hard to pick from all of those guys. So I root for all the team, but Deion Sanders, Derwin James, Dalvin Cook, and Jalen Ramsey. I try to IG them all the time, and they're just the best. And I love what they're doing with their lives, too.
That's the point.
Cool. Thank you, Paula. Appreciate that so much. And that's the fun part about what Thursday night becomes, because you're a Clemson fan. Are you going to be a Jaguars fan? My guess is you might. Now, you probably got a favorite NFL team, but you're going to follow – potentially Trevor Lawrence, the way you followed him at Clemson. Something that's happened with Deshaun Watson. It's happened with other players at other schools, too. And it's part of the fun process of watching guys go college to pro.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
All right, Wes. Number one team in women's soccer. We keep bragging about how great the league is, and it is. But the number one team in the country rolled into the NCAA tournament. Their head coach joins us right now, Mark Krikorian, down here in beautiful Florida State. Let's get the coach on here, see what's going on. First of all, coach, great to have you back on the show. It's going to be great to watch you play again. I know you've had some interesting games in the spring, but it's been a while since you jumped on another team and from the NCAA world.
Yeah, it's been a really interesting and different spring soccer for us. I guess the whole world has had an interesting year, and those of us playing an NCAA tournament here in April and May are experiencing that for a first time. But we had some flexibility in our schedule this spring with the automatic qualifier in the fall. So we took a bit of a non-traditional route and played some different teams. But I will tell you, our team is focused, I hope prepared and ready to play these college teams that are coming up quickly.
Coach, I know you coached at that level, but to bring NWSL and have exhibitions and things like that, Krista McFarland was with us last week, talked about, you know, it kind of sharpens you. But at the same time, did you get out of it what you were looking for?
I think we got absolutely what we were looking for. You know, so many of the kids are coming to Florida State with the hope and the intent and the goal of making it as professional players. And for our kids to be able to match up four different times in the spring with the NWSL players and teams, what a joy it was for our kids to be on the field playing against Alex Morgan and Marta and Sydney LaRue and Ashlyn Harris, Allie Krieger, and the list just goes on of just world stars that our kids had the chance to measure themselves against. And we as a staff certainly saw some weaknesses in our play, and they exposed some things that maybe some other teams wouldn't be able to. So I think it was a win-win. We competed favorably for the most part, and we learned a lot about ourselves.
Coach, I know every year is a different year, and this has been, as you said, a strange one. But does it feel like there's a little unfinished business with this particular unit that you're going to roll out with for the NCAA tournament?
Yeah, I think that we all felt very good about our team through the course of the fall, and that we played at a pretty high level through all of the different challenges that presented themselves. And to not have an NCAA tournament to roll into following the ACC tournament, it was really different. But again, we're not complaining about anything. We're thankful that there is an NCAA tournament. We're thankful that we're going to have a chance to go up into Carolina and measure ourselves against the best teams in the country. And it's really different. But I think flexible thinking on our part is the name of the game for this year, and recognizing that the season is a very different season. I mean, who would have thought that a college soccer season would start in July and end in May? Usually we're looking at the basketball folks starting in November and ending in March as a really long season. And, you know, we add a lot of months onto that for what we've gone through this year. But, you know, our strength staff is outstanding here. And I think that they've positioned our kids well, both rested but also fit to go in and compete very well.
All right, 21 straight NCAA appearances, and while the landscape of this one is entirely different from maybe what you're accustomed to, this time of year, no matter when it is, do you still get nerves, butterflies, or is this kind of old hat at this point?
I think it's more excitement. Certainly there's always a little bit of nervousness, and you want that your team will show up and have their best performance on the most important days. And we have a collection of very talented players. It may be our most talented group, top to bottom, that we've ever had. But, you know, none of it matters, really, if on the big stage you don't show up and you don't play your best. So I do feel as though our group is in a really good spot as we go into the NCAA tournament. And I think we're all excited. I think we're really looking forward to playing this outside competition, different competition. Certainly in the past, when you earn a number one seed, you get a chance to play at home through a good part of the tournament. But again, this year it's different. We're going to have the whole tournament in Carolina. And I guess the good news for us is we're pretty familiar with playing up there. We seem to have an awful lot of games up in that area. So we consider it kind of a second home, home away from home for us.
Coach, it's also interesting to see some new blood, if you will, right? To see some teams outside the conference. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to surprise any of us if you see some really familiar faces as we go a little bit deeper into this tournament.
Yeah, it's a strange year, right, with the 48-team bracket. And, we've traditionally had 9 or 10 teams in the tournament. And this year we have about half of that. But there are still some really good teams in the ACC that are going to be in this tournament and have a chance to go deep into the tournament. And we're hoping that we're one of those.
Coach, we're a couple years in on this, this network as it is. The value of this product line for your sport, and you mentioned the transitional season, so this may be awkward for this particular year, but the showcase of the tournament, the showcases in the regular season, all the things that kind of we had hoped for in terms of exposure. We've heard from a lot of coaches in spring sports who say it's made a definite difference. What have you seen in the two fall campaigns to lift women's soccer even to a higher platform in the ACC?
Yeah, I think it's become a necessary a tool for all of us. This digital age, of course, is here. Us old school dinosaurs. I need someone to come and start my computer every morning for me and stuff like that. But no, I think that it's vital on the recruiting front that the kids have the ability to watch us play and get a chance to look at the games. And, you know, the network, so professional and so well done. You guys do just a great job. And having our sport covered and having the opportunity to go and watch other teams in the conference play, too, is I think it's just great.
Speaking of recruiting, Coach, it's one thing to have the exposure on ACC Network, which is great. It's great to have terrific players, which you do. It's cool to play professional teams. Like, it's got to be a great selling tool in terms of recruiting. But you've also got this thing called name, image, and likeness that is going to affect the state of Florida July 1st. We asked Kristen McFarland this question. I thought her answer was brilliant because without missing a beat, she said, oh, you know what? Nike would be a great sponsor. And again, she's talked about becoming a professional and getting her degree and everything else. So from a recruiting perspective, how much does name, image, and likeness now come into play for you, given the fact that, hey, beginning July 1st in the state of Florida, that's a green light. It's all legit.
You know, it's really interesting. It does appear that our group, our administrative team, has gotten out in front of it and have spent a lot of time on trying to prepare for it, even to the point of putting together a couple of academic courses to help our kids to better understand how they can mold their brand and how they can position themselves to be able to profit from their name, image, and likeness. I think it's still to be seen exactly how all of it fits together. You know, there's an awful lot of great athletes. Probably the one kid that we've had in our program that missed out in a lot of ways is Castellanos. If you have 1.3 million Twitter, Instagram followers, probably there was potential for some pretty big earning. But she was a little ahead of her time in that regard. But we have a lot of kids that really very bright, big personalities, outstanding players that I'm sure are going to be very attractive to some different corporations that are going to take a look and say, hey, this is someone that maybe we can have that they're interested in supporting.
Coach, I'm going to follow real quick on the back end of this. You also have a great eye for world-class talent internationally. You mentioned Dana, great player. You've got several international players on your roster now. Do you think about the international side of this? I wonder sometimes, you know, because there is a degree of commercialization at a younger age in some of those countries. Now they come to the United States. Do you believe in the soccer world there'll be an expectation of that if they were to come play collegiately in the U.S. after going through whatever experience they have internationally?
Yeah, it's a really good question. One of the areas that everyone here at Florida State is looking at, and probably everyone around the country, is how will it work with the international kids? Because they're really not allowed to work here in the U.S. On the visa that they come in on unless it's on campus. Mm-hmm. So I think right now our international office, our compliance office, the lawyers, everyone is trying to work together to figure out how this will affect the international players, if they can, in fact, participate in this, and you know what the immigration law will allow for all of those kids.
Wow. Tell you what, it's a new world, man. We are right on the front end of the new world. Well, I tell you what, the easy thing to do is get the bag of balls and you go practice and carry, and good luck on Saturday in the first round, right? That's the number one goal.
It sure is. You know, it's always nice to share some time with you guys, but the focus is on what's lying ahead for our group, and we'll get back out. We'll start training again, and hopefully, whether it's Elon or Milwaukee, we'll be ready to play.
And Coach, tell Kristen that we're rooting for her to have a very, very long, successful run in Europe. All right.
I think she knows that.
Yeah.
Well, we sure appreciate you guys. You guys did a great interview with her, and yeah, she's a rising star. That's for sure.
She's great. Best of luck,
all right,
Coach
Mark Kerkorian. Good luck, and good luck at Cary. We look forward to following Florida State next week.
All right, guys. Thank you.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.